Andrew Dewart was only 31 years old when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
One of the biggest questions is, what can I expect? And there's not really a good answer for that.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Parkinson's disease manifests itself differently in every patient. This hour, I'll talk with Dr. Ergun Uç, a neurologist who's worked with and studied the disease for many years. And we'll find out what it's like to live with Parkinson's from Andrew Dewart and Terry Hurchis, who was diagnosed at age 51. We also want to hear from you, your experiences, and your questions this hour. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. There's evidence that doctors and healers have been treating people with Parkinson's disease for over 1,000 years, but there is still no cure. This hour, the latest research on Parkinson's disease, and we'll find out what it's like to live with the disease. My first guest today is Dr. Ergun Uç, Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Iowa and Staff Neurologist at the VA Medical Center in Iowa City. Hello, Dr. Uç.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And first, can you help me define exactly what Parkinson's disease is?
Sure. So first, I would like to define the term Parkinsonism.
Okay.
So Parkinsonism means the symptom complex of tremor at rest, slowness, stiffness, and difficulty walking. And also, many patients with Parkinsonism have decreased facial expression, decrease in their voice volume, increased drooling. So this is Parkinsonism. Almost 75 to 80% of all cases of Parkinsonism are due to Parkinson's disease. So there can be other causes, such as Parkinsonism induced by certain medications due to blocking of dopamine, a chemical in the brain. Then there could be Parkinsonism due to damage to certain parts of the brain due to other causes than Parkinson's disease, such as mini-strokes, trauma, or carbon monoxide poisoning, for example. And also, there are some other diseases called Parkinson plus syndromes, which look like Parkinson's at the very beginning, but usually have a much worse course than Parkinson's. Examples include mouthful names like progressive supranuclear palsy, multiple system atrophy, corticobasal degeneration, and so forth. So when we say Parkinson's disease, we mean a specific illness in the brain that leads to dysfunction and death of cells which produce dopamine in the brain. And this is a progressive degenerative condition, and we don't know the exact cause.
And we, of course, we've been studying Parkinson's disease for a long time.
Yes.
There have been a lot of theories about causes over the years, but we still have not been able to pinpoint why a person would get Parkinson's.
Yes. However, even in the last 2 decades, there have been huge developments. For example, back in 1997, the first mutation, the first gene change was identified that would lead to a picture consistent with Parkinson's disease. And after that, a good number more have been identified. And also, we have been able to identify certain environmental causes, such as exposure to pesticides in an, at an occupational level, which increases the tendency to develop Parkinson's disease.
And do we know that for a fact? I mean, I know that there has been, particularly in Iowa, there's been a lot of talk about that because there are a lot of farmers of a certain age who develop Parkinson's disease.
So what I should say is there is an increased association.
Okay.
So, but we can't determine it on a it's very hard to determine on a personal level. But when we look across thousands of people, then we see increased risk of Parkinson's disease in those who might have been exposed to these chemicals.
Okay, however, so pesticide exposure doesn't necessarily mean that you will get Parkinson's disease, but it is one of those factors that, that increases the likelihood.
Yes, and also there is a saying, genetics loads the gun, and environment pulls the trigger. So what that means is that people may have a genetic predisposition, you know, genetic tendency, familial tendency to develop Parkinson's disease, but would not have perhaps developed Parkinson's if they had not come into contact with that particular toxin. So therefore, people who don't have that genetic risk factor are less likely to develop in the presence of toxins even. And in terms of genetics, I would like to tell one more thing.
Sure.
So, a good number of genetic changes or mutations have been identified that cause Parkinson's disease, but they only account for 3-5% of all cases, or about 10% of cases in whom the disease started before age 50. However, still this is very important because it tells us what chemical pathways in the body, in the brain, are involved in Parkinson's disease and helps us to direct our research in certain directions. So although we have not exactly pinpointed the exact cause of Parkinson's disease, there has been huge progress.
When you mentioned earlier these symptoms, the tremor, the slowness, the movement disorder that indicates possibly Parkinson's disease, only indicates Parkinson's in 75-80% of cases.
Yes.
Is this a difficult disease to diagnose?
Well, it can be. So if patients have the typical resting tremor, meaning tremor when they are not using their hands, but just sitting there and resting, then it's relatively easy to diagnose. But if they only have stiffness, slowness, it could be rather non-specific, meaning it could be seen in many other conditions. So therefore, patients may go undiagnosed for a while. Actually, statistics show that patients are diagnosed 1 to 3 years after their symptoms have started, actually. So the challenge with the other 25% comes, many of those other patients in the 25% are diagnosed with Parkinson's disease first, but they do not respond well or not at all to the usual Parkinson medications, and they have a faster and more debilitating course. And with time, it becomes evident that we are not dealing with typical Parkinson's disease. So in such cases, in the first few years, it may be a challenge to diagnose if we are dealing with the regular Parkinson's disease or with a type of Parkinsonism other than Parkinson's disease.
So it can even be response to medications that we know tend to have an effect on Parkinson's disease can help you diagnose. If those medications don't work, it may not be Parkinson's.
Yes, that's not an absolute rule, but that's true. So if there is no good benefit despite skillful trial of medications, then one has to think if we are dealing with some other cause of Parkinsonism. But in the last several years, we now have a brain scan available. So before, Parkinson's diagnosis was almost purely clinical, meaning an experienced doctor listened to you, looked at you, examined you, and thought that it was Parkinson's disease, maybe gave you a medication trial and saw what the results were, and it was a little bit more challenging. Now, these days, especially when there is a confusing tremor, we can do a dopamine transporter scan, also called DAT scan, to differentiate between different types of tremor. Either is it due to a disease called essential tremor or Parkinson's disease. In essential tremor, the tremor is mainly while people are doing things or holding their hands in front of them, like or with actions such as eating, drinking. And again, as I said, with Parkinson's, it's at rest. Sometimes it's not that clear. And in those cases, this dopamine scan in the brain, it can help. But even that scan is not completely foolproof, but it helps us to differentiate if we are dealing with Parkinson's disease or another cause of tremor.
So the diagnostic tools have gotten much, much better over the years. And we've focused, we're going to, throughout the hour, we'll talk about a lot of the different treatments and new developments in that. And we focused mainly on the physical symptoms of Parkinson's disease, but there are also other non-motor symptoms as well. What are some of those in just a minute?
Sure. So very important topic. So these are cognitive symptoms. So Parkinson's disease actually is an important cause of dementia. In about 40% of patients, dementia may develop, and even in higher percentage if patients have the disease for a long time and live into a long age. Then other issues such as anxiety, depression, and with the progression of the disease, patients may develop hallucinations and psychosis. And also, patients have autonomic symptoms, such as constipation, urinary urgency, incontinence, erectile dysfunction, and what we call orthostatic hypotension, or feeling faint when patients stand up. And also, Parkinson's disease causes a fair number of sleep problems.
We're going to have to take a short break here, and we're going to talk to a couple of individuals who've been living with Parkinson's disease. But Dr. Uch, stay with us, and throughout the hour, we'll bring you back into the conversation. And as I mentioned, we're also going to talk about treatments and new developments in treatments this hour. We'd also love for you to join the conversation. My guest right now is Dr. Ergun Uch, Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Iowa and Staff Neurologist at the VA Medical Center in Iowa City. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Parkinson's disease, and I've been talking with Dr. Ergun Uch, Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Iowa. He's also Staff Neurologist of the VA Medical Center in Iowa City, and he has been studying Parkinson's disease for many years. We're going to continue our conversation. We'll talk about treatments and new developments in Parkinson's disease. As we were talking about a few minutes ago, new diagnostic tools have made it easier for doctors to identify Parkinson's disease earlier. And Andrew Dewart of Fort Dodge has been living with Parkinson's now for more than a decade. He was diagnosed 12 years ago when he was only 31. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
You were 31 years old when you were diagnosed with Parkinson's. How long had you been displaying symptoms that made you think, oh, there's something wrong, I need to see a doctor?
Oh, several years. I actually saw a number of neurologists. I was living in Seattle at the time, and saw a number of neurologists before that, and all of them discounted Parkinson's, even though it was in the family. My grandfather had it.
Wow.
But I remember having a tremor in my right thumb all the way back to high school. So it'd been a long time, and it had just gotten progressively worse. And so seeing a number of neurologists, and they discounted it, and finally saw a neurologist that wanted to try me on one of the medications for Parkinson's, which is called Sinemet. He said, it doesn't mean you have it. Try it for a couple weeks and come back and let's see how it does. When I returned, I said, it was amazing. It works great. Every 4 hours, my tremor goes away, and then slowly it starts coming back.
Right, and that probably seemed like wonderful news to you.
Oh, yeah, I was overjoyed. And then I saw his face go completely white.
Oh.
And he said, well, that means you have Parkinson's disease. And that led me down a emotional period of years with the depression and not knowing what to expect.
Right. And not only were you 31 years old, you're a father. You had two sons at the time and another one on the way when you received this diagnosis?
Yes.
Wow. So what was going through your mind? I mean, I understand there was a period of depression. What were some of the things that you were thinking about?
Well, again, I didn't know what the progression was going to be. I didn't know, you know, the common misconception or most conception of Parkinson's disease is it's a disease that hits later in life. Well, I found out, shockingly, that it wasn't. Mm-hmm. There is young onset, and later I was classified as juvenile onset based on the symptom as early as high school. But it was how am I going to be able to support my family? How am I going to be able to play with my kids? Am I going to be able to dance at their wedding? What's my life expectancy? All these things were running through my head. And a period of time kept going. I kept learning more about the disease, and I got a little bit more reassured in where I was. I knew things were going to change. I didn't know how fast. We ended up deciding to move to Iowa because my wife's family was from here, because we didn't know how fast it was going to go. So we moved to Iowa and met with some great neurologists in Iowa City, and went on a journey of finding out how I could kind of still have a life. And one of the things I did as a young teenager is I cycled all over the place. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do that again. So I did some research and found what's called a tadpole trike. It's a two wheels in the front, one wheel in the back. And I found this guy out of Arizona that rode one of these, and he had Parkinson's disease. So he and I developed an email relationship, and slowly I learned that exercise was helping my tremor. It was starting to go away. And then I got in touch with a gentleman out of the Cleveland Clinic named Jay Alpers. He's a research doctor that's doing studies on exercise, more specifically forced exercise, and how that relieves many symptoms of Parkinson's disease.
I know that you were pursuing medication, but you actually found that cycling, spending time on the bike, whether a trike or a bike, was actually alleviating your symptoms.
Yes. Absolutely.
So that's a part of your treatment now.
That's part of my treatment. And one of my friends says that's one of my medications that I have to take is exercise.
And Dr. Uch, is that common that I know you've done a great deal of research into physical therapy and exercise and recently into brisk walking. Is that common that a really vigorous kind of exercise can help many people with Parkinson's deal with symptoms?
Well, certainly studies are in progress, but the current evidence so far and also personal observations like Andrew's certainly emphasize this point. So I personally believe strongly that exercise plays a major role in alleviation of symptoms, and we don't exactly know if it plays also a role in slowing down of the disease. Certainly Andrew's age and current physical condition allows him to exercise vigorously. But still, at this time, we have to do more research to find out what types of exercise. You know, exercise can be aerobic, can be resistance like weightlifting, can be flexibility type of exercise. So what type of exercise to give to whom, meaning at what stage of the disease, at what ability, and for how long, and at what intensity. So all this has to be still established. But, you know, having said that, I certainly recommend to all my patients to exercise within their ability. So common sense here should play a big role. First of all, it has to be safe. We should avoid falls, sprains, injuries, heart attacks, breathing problems, all of these problems that can come with exercise. So therefore, it has to be within the person's abilities. And because there is no standardized treatment, exercise treatment for Parkinson's yet, so this is best to be determined between the patient, his care provider, physician, and a person experienced in physical training techniques. So in our particular study, which we just recently published, we studied aerobic walking. So patients would really break sweat, but they were doing it just by usual walking, either in a neighborhood trail or in a mall, in a local track. And we monitored their compliance if they were doing the treatment as we recommended by heart rate monitors. And we found that they actually were able to exercise at a moderate intensity. And we have observed improvement in their Parkinson's scores, in their walking speed, in their mood, in their quality of life scores, especially psychological outlook for the future, how they envision themselves in the society. So all these perceptions improved, and we even had changes in one of their cognitive, so thinking measures.
Oh, really? So yes. So it helps their cognitive ability,
yes,
as well.
And this is similar to results which are found also in normal aging, you know, meaning aging without any particular neurological disease. So this is very exciting, but again, I have to emphasize that exercise has to be done within the patient's ability and in a safe manner and with appropriate guidance and supervision from their care providers. Otherwise, it can result in injuries and other undesirable side effects.
And this study you mentioned was just published this month in the journal Neurology,
yes,
and it involved 60 Parkinson's patients between the ages of 50 and 80. Your prescription was to walk 3 times a week wearing this heart rate monitor. And so some, they started with sessions of 15 minutes, but worked up to sessions of 45 minutes,
yes,
at a time. So 3 days a week is not not an extensive exercise program. So even this sort of I'm not going to say minimal, but moderate exercise program, you saw a really significant benefit.
Yes. So, you know, I must add, you know, that our study has to be confirmed with larger and controlled studies, but it got very good reception and is consistent with prior observations in other populations. So I would like to draw your attention to physical activity guidelines for Americans. You know, although sometimes people may have a disdain for the U.S. government, may tell them, this is really good. So it has been found after review of all literature and research that 18 to 65-year-old healthy adults should do at least 150 minutes of moderate aerobic exercise per week. For example, 30 minutes 5 times a week. So, and this is a very strong recommendation. They also recommend doing a couple days of resistance exercises. Again, of course, this has to be done with certain guidance, but this has even been established by a government panel which convened in 2007 and published their results in 2008. It's available on U.S. government websites, and I strongly recommend that people read and follow that. Of course, the caveat here is that it has been recommended for healthy adults. And also, in our own study, these 50 to 80-year-old patients with Parkinson's disease were not demented, so they did not have significant memory or thinking problems, and they did not use any walker or cane to walk. So our recommendations count for a subset of patients with Parkinson's disease. So basically, after reading this article, a patient who is not in great shape or is having significant walking and balance problems should not try these recommendations on their own.
I'm talking with Dr. Ergun Uç, Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Iowa and Staff Neurologist at the VA Medical Center in Iowa City. Also with us is Andrew Dewart of Fort Dodge, who's been living with Parkinson's disease for more than a decade. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well with your questions, your experiences with Parkinson's. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. In a moment, I'm going to talk with another person who's been living with Parkinson's disease. But first, Bob is on the line in Bettendorf. And Dr. Uç, Bob has already been using walking. Hello, Bob.
Yes, hello. I was diagnosed 9 years ago, and my son was diagnosed last year at the age of 29. He's currently under the care of University of Iowa, and Dr. Uç is not his physician, but probably aware of him. I try to walk 1,000 miles a year, but my problem is, of course, use a cane for balance, and I have, you know, the breathing problem. I wondered if they've made any advancement as far as anything for medication or anything for therapy as far as getting rid of the problem where you freeze and kind of lose your balance. That's my only nemesis at this point.
Okay. So, Bob, for how long have you had Parkinson's disease again?
9 years.
9 years, okay. So, balance problem in Parkinson's disease is a very important one. And so unlike stiffness or slowness, which are due to mainly dopamine-related issues in the brain, balance is governed by many systems in the brain. It's not just dopamine. So as a result, the medications we use, and those mainly affect dopamine, may only help balance if the balance issue in a particular patient is due to dopamine deficiency. But if there are other brain chemicals or systems involved, then the effect of medications would be limited, and if you push the medications too hard, they can even be counterproductive because they can drop the blood pressure, make the patient lightheaded, and can lead to falls themselves. So, unfortunately, the medical treatment of balance disorders in Parkinson's disease is difficult, but such balance issues which are not responsive to medications usually start later in the disease. So, however, it is beneficial to discuss it with your doctor, see a physical therapist, receive balance training exercises, and see if they help. And I'm sure you are probably already using a number of compensation maneuvers so they can teach you further maneuvers. Also, along with balance problems, there is another issue in Parkinson's disease, which is called freezing of gait. So patients come to sudden stops, especially when they come to narrow doorways, cluttered environments. And that is also a major source of disability and can lead to falls. So, for example, for that condition, there are a number of mitigating maneuvers that can help. So I think balance issue requires a rather comprehensive and multidisciplinary approach, meaning that it's not just your neurologist, but also be seen by a physical therapist as well, and try to apply different treatment maneuvers.
Bob, again, I hope that helps. We do need to take a short break. Dr. Ergun Uç will be back with you in just a moment, and Andrew Dewart of Fort Dodge will also welcome Terry Hurchis into the conversation to talk with her about living with Parkinson's disease as well. And you are welcome to join us with your questions. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about Parkinson's disease. We're finding out about the latest research and also finding out what it's like to live with Parkinson's disease. You're welcome to join our conversation with your questions and your experiences. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Dr. Ergun Uç, Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Iowa and staff neurologist at the VA Medical Center in Iowa City. Also with us is Andrew Dewart of Fort Dodge. He's been living with Parkinson's for more than 12 years. He was diagnosed when he was only 31 years old. And now with us is Terry Hurchis. She lives in Elk Run Heights, and she was diagnosed 6 years ago at the age of 51. Hello, Terry.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And what led you to your diagnosis?
Well, I had a tremor for years and years, and my doctor said it was benign familial tremor, which my mother, uncle, and cousin had tremors, so that made sense. And he said, you're too young for Parkinson's, and I never heard that, really. That never felt sunk in. And then I was playing a video game, and I could not tap my finger very fast at all, and I knew something was wrong, and he sent me to a neurologist at that point. He diagnosed me in about 5 minutes.
Well, the fact that your doctor said you're too young for Parkinson's, I mean, obviously, Andrew was diagnosed when he was 31. We just heard from Bob in Bettendorf. His son was diagnosed at age 29. Clearly, that's a misnomer. But
that's right.
At 51, that was a real shock to you.
Oh, it was. I never even really heard of Parkinson's other than Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
I knew nothing about it. My doctor said, don't get on the internet, and he gave me a book to read. I opened it up and flipped through it and opened on the chapter of picking out your nursing home, and I shut it and didn't read anything or look up anything for quite a while.
Wow. So just like Andrew, it sounds like you went through a period of depression discovering that you had this disease.
Big one. I was a caregiver in my profession, and I was not did not want to be in need of a caregiver. I could not accept that.
What
day might come.
What kind of treatment programs have you pursued?
I have on medical treatment. I take medicines, and exercise, I think, is very important. I did participate in a delay the disease exercise class. David did put that out, which is exercise specifically for people with Parkinson's. And I just recently had deep brain stimulation done.
Really? And what does I think a lot of us have heard a little bit about deep brain stimulation, but what does that involve for you?
It was a two-part surgery. Well, first I had to have 4 days of testing to make sure I was a candidate for it. And then in the first surgery, they put four electrodes, actually, in each side of my brain deep down in. And they had me awake for part of the surgery to make sure they hit the right spot to stop my tremors. So I was awake when they were drilling in my brain. And they pulled some wires over to the side of my head by my ear. And then a week later, I went in and I went to sleep for this part of it. And they put in a battery similar to a pacemaker battery and pulled the wires down behind my ear along my neck and put them into the battery. And then they turned it on about a week later. And we're still trying to find the right settings, but it's helping.
And how does it help?
It reduces my tremors, takes away my shuffling. Oh, lots of things. I stand up straighter. I can talk better. People tell me I look so much happier. I have a more facial expression.
So it's really made a real difference.
Yes, it has.
Now, you, I know, have been willing and eager to participate in any kind of Parkinson's research that you've been able to be a part of. What kinds of studies have you participated in?
I was in a driving study in Iowa City. I'm in a singing study right now, singing and swallowing. And I did a walking study. I also put myself out there. I worked at a hospital, and I said, put me out there. I don't think I look like what people think Parkinson's look like, and I want to make them aware that younger people get it. So I've been on television and the newspaper. And my neurologist told me not to go to the support group in town because they were so far advanced it would make me depressed. So I decided to start my own group, and we started with about 8 people, and we're up to about 50 now.
Wow.
It started as a young onset, but there was a 90-year-old gentleman who kept coming, so I dropped that part of the name.
And does it help you to connect with other people with Parkinson's?
Oh, yes, very much so. That's part of the exercise classes, the camaraderie we develop. We meet twice a week. And
Andrew, I know you've started a support group as well. Does that help you to connect with others?
Oh, absolutely, because you learn, everybody goes through this disease a little bit different than everybody else. So you learn what they're going through, what helps with them, and you offer your own suggestions, and if it works, great. If not, it's a sounding board that you can express what you're going through. But we also, in our group, we try to keep it as positive as we can. We always try to end with something that's uplifting, because when I was first diagnosed and I started to meet people with it, I kept hearing the phrase, well, Parkinson's isn't going to define me. I'm going to defy this. Well, I have a different view on that. It does define me. It's like I have brown eyes, I have brown hair, I have Parkinson's disease. But it's how your attitude toward it, and I think Terry expresses this as well too, is that if you have a good attitude and you're willing to put yourself out there and show the positive of who you are and you happen to have Parkinson's disease, it makes it more livable.
I agree. My sense of humor gets me through.
Oh, yeah.
So there are all of these in the media, and you know, Terry, I know your doctor told you not to look on the internet, but there are all of these stories that come out all the time about different research about Parkinson's disease. There was one published recently saying that maybe cinnamon has a potential possibility in playing a role in slowing down the development of Parkinson's disease. How does it feel when you see all of these different stories? And you know, I remember I had a very, very close friend and mentor who had Parkinson's disease when the first studies about deep brain stimulation came out, and that was so exciting, except that it wasn't within his reach because it was so new. Is that sometimes frustrating when you see new research, Terry?
I don't pay any attention.
How about you, Andrew?
You know, I used to pay a lot of attention to the research early on in the diagnosis. At that time, they kept telling me to drink more coffee. The caffeine's supposed to help. And
which makes you tremor a little more.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't worry about it so much. If my doctor says something, well, let's try this, then I start to listen. The one part about that is the exercise for me has made a massive difference in that.
Oh, me too.
And I can't stress how much. And I know it has to be under certain conditions, and I started out on a trike and ended up now I'm doing I did a full week of Ragbri a few years ago. I'm back on
great.
A two-wheel bike.
Wow.
It just makes a massive difference.
I'm back on a two-wheel one too. It's like riding a bike without the training wheels to be
exactly.
Back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. We have
our exercise class is amazing. You can see the difference in us after just the first 8 weeks and everybody, how much they've improved.
Really?
Yes.
So the two of you have spread the gospel of exercise.
Oh,
yeah.
Another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have a couple of questions from people who are listening. This is from Natasha. And she says, my paternal grandfather had Parkinson's, and I lost my father to Parkinson's. He also had Lewy body dementia. 3 years ago this month, I lost him. How significant is the genetic predisposition to this disease? I've been told not very, but experience seems to show otherwise. Dr. Uch?
Yes. So certainly having a family member increases the risk of having Parkinson's disease. Now, there are several genes identified now which are associated with Parkinson's disease. So so it depends on what kind of gene change or mutation they have, and that will define their risk and what kind of characteristics their Parkinson's will have. Unfortunately, these gene tests are not widely available or expensive, and they may not change the management too much, but you might have heard, you know, some of the conditions are dominant, some are recessive, meaning they may skip generations. So basically, if you have such a strong family history, it certainly increases your risk, but the severity of the risks depends on what kind of mutation you have.
Okay.
And also, what has struck me in our group here with Parkinson patients is they are all relatively young and have strong family histories. So this is not the usual experience in most patients, you know. But it has been well identified that if Parkinson's disease starts before age 50, there is a stronger likelihood that it will be genetic.
We have this email from Helen. She says, my grandfather had Parkinson's disease and my mother has restless leg syndrome. Is there a connection between the two?
So the grandfather, paternal grandfather or maternal grandfather?
She didn't say.
Okay.
But I assume maternal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so restless leg syndrome can be a freestanding disease, a freestanding condition. But it's more common in patients with Parkinson's disease, and it may sometimes precede Parkinson's disease. So another interesting feature is that medications that help the movement disorder in Parkinson's disease, which boost dopamine, also help restless leg syndrome. But the mechanisms of restless leg syndrome otherwise are not that well identified. So I say that there is a connection, but restless legs can still be a freestanding condition. So, and in their family, there is probably more of a connection than it would have been in general population.
Now, I think after hearing your story, Andrew, and after hearing your story, Terry, and, you know, hearing Bob's story when he called in a few minutes ago, I think a lot of people are going to be nervous because a lot of people have tremors in their hands. And I know many people in their 20s who do. If you have something like that, Dr. Uch, is that a red flag? Do you need to be aware and think maybe there is a Parkinson's connection?
So so it depends on the type of tremor. If the tremor is at rest, you know, meaning while you are not using your hands, just sitting there and having a tremor in your thumb, in your wrist, that is certainly an alarm for Parkinson's. But if it's more with action, such as using tools, writing, eating, drinking, then it's probably more likely to be essential tremor, also called benign familial tremor. But the most commonly used name is now essential tremor. So I wouldn't be alarmed for any tremor, but if it's mostly a resting tremor.
All right.
And actually, I've been told I have both.
You have both. Okay, Terry.
So may I add one more fact? So for a long time, essential tremor and Parkinson's disease have been considered as very separate diseases. But so essential tremor actually is much more common than Parkinson's disease. But over the years, it has, and also in my own clinical experience, it has been observed that some patients with essential tremor, after decades of having typical essential tremor, may progress into or may transform into Parkinson's like condition. That's because essential tremor is very heterogeneous, meaning that the disease probably has many different causes, which results in many different courses for different people.
Okay.
So there are always all these nuances. So therefore, Terry's story doesn't surprise me too much.
All right. And we're nearly out of time. And Andrew, I want to ask you, you've obviously coped with your disease extremely well. The exercise has helped. You have three beautiful children. But you also have said that you don't regret having Parkinson's.
No. Like I said earlier, it's kind of like having brown eyes. It's part of who I am. I embrace it. I don't think it's difficult to go through some of the stuff that we have to deal with as patients, but it doesn't mean my life is over. I'm still able to play with my kids. I'm still able to go out and ride the bike. I'm still able to work, fortunately. And now that's not the case with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the bright side, and it also has made my kids very compassionate. They see the struggles that I go with, and they're very compassionate with other people. And I often say it's not just me that has it. My entire family and everybody I know that has to deal with some aspect of my disease. So in some aspect, we all have the disease. So it's kind of in our house, we deal with the three H's. It's humor, honesty, and humility.
And Terry, you've said, similar to what Andrew's saying, you actually feel like it's made you a better person.
Oh, it has. I've quit worrying so much. I live in the moment. I just find something beautiful in nature and anything every day. And the same with my children. I think it's taught them to be more compassionate. Think differently of people with quote-unquote disabilities.
Well, and Dr. Uch, this kind of positive outlook that both Andrew and Terry has, I have to believe that that's beneficial in coping with the disease.
Yes, certainly. And if I may say a few words of relief for Andrew and Terry, so both in my own experience and also in well-researched studies, it has been shown that the natural history of Parkinson's is different for people who begin early versus late. So people who begin early, they continue to respond to medications for a long time, and whereas people who start in their later ages, they have a shorter course.
Oh, that's excellent news. And Dr. Uch, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you
for spreading the word about us.
Yeah.
Dr. Ergun Uch is Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Iowa and Staff Neurologist at the VA Medical Center of Iowa City. Andrew Dewart of Fort Dodge has been living with Parkinson's for more than 12 years. He was diagnosed when he was only 31. And Terry Hurchis lives in Elk Run Heights. She was diagnosed 6 years ago at the age of 51. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. On the program tomorrow, it's Horticulture Day. I'm Charity Nebbe.